up my day. Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO. This is Hidden from History. This is going to be archived on hiddenfromhistory.org, also on my website of www.angus-mcleod.com. McLeod spelled M-C-L-E-O-D. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. I'm sitting in for Kevin Annette today. Kevin Annette's going to be away for a little while, so he asked me to fill in for him. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to invite Wes Pigeon on, and also I'm going to have Ryan Foster and Dan Merchant from the Agora coming on too. And actually, I have Ryan sitting in the studio with me right now. I'm going to get Ryan to quickly introduce himself, and then we're also going to get Dan on the phone because there's an extremely important article that's been written in the Agora in regards to the foster care children here in British Columbia, the Mapleson Center, and other areas too that's been covered quite well. It's a very beautiful written article, and also Kevin Annette wrote an article too about the child trafficking going on here in British Columbia. But Ryan, could you quickly talk a little bit about your paper, what the importance is of it, and you know how you've been helping people break stories that the mainstream media didn't want to touch?
Well, the Agora, oh hi Reg, by the way, the Agora is unlike any other paper in Vancouver right now, probably unlike any other paper in Canada. It's the first what we call open source concept, community content driven paper in existence here. And the whole point of the paper is not to come at the news or at current events or at commentary and analysis from any one agenda driven angle or from any one bias, but to create a venue whereby anybody from any angle has access and can get their voice heard and their words read. Basically the paper is, I mean, you got articles in there from Free Man Society, various co-ops, Fair Trade, lots of different individual citizen activists and journalists, articles on permaculture. I mean, the local section is huge, but there's also a national and a world section, and you get a kind of a variety and a dialogue between people in this paper that you're not going to see in any of the other papers. The criteria to get in are so basic, criteria being that the work be written professionally, not incite violence, and documented, sources documented, because unlike other papers, we don't expect the reader to just take our word for it. But other than that, regardless of the subject matter, you can get in this paper.
And also, there's an article in there which is called Who is Protecting Our Children? Before I have Dan talk about that, I went to the BC Ministries website, and I pulled up and I printed out the page, and what it does is it talks about keeping children safe, what is abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, and it goes on and it talks about, you know, what the warning signs are and how the social workers are supposed to, you know, in certain situations come in and do reports. Before I ask you, Dan, to comment about that article, I just wanted to quickly read through two paragraphs of this website that I pulled up. After you make a report, if it appears the children may indeed need protection, a child protection social worker will start an investigation. This involves seeing and talking to children and people who know the child, such as a parent, extended family, teacher, family doctor, or child care worker. Depending on the kind of abuse or neglect involved, the social worker may contact other agencies such as the police, the superintendent of schools, or the local medical health officer. If the child is Aboriginal, their band or community will also be involved, or the information may be turned over to an Aboriginal child welfare agency. It goes on to say how children are protected. When the investigation finds that a child needs protection, the social worker will take whatever steps are most appropriate and least disruptive to the child. Children are only removed from their homes when they are in immediate danger, and nothing less disruptive can protect them. Now, with that in mind, you know, when your paper wrote that article where you were talking to Mr. Pigeon, who we have sitting here right now, can you talk about how the people within the Maple Center and elsewhere have violated these procedures that are laid out here and have not kept the best interest of the child at heart, which has put numerous children in serious danger here in the province of British Columbia?
All right. Thanks for having me on there, Reg. Working there with Wes and hearing his story and putting a story together for the Agora there, it's definitely become apparent to me that within the Ministry of Children and Families, there seems to be protocols that aren't being followed, and it's directly resulting in children being injured due to neglect and unprofessional work being carried out.
And also, Mr. Pitchin, he went to the RCMP, and also your paper there did an investigation where you called the ministry's office responsible for child and family. What were the responses from the RCMP, and at the same time, what were the responses from the ministry's office?
Well, from the ministry first, after hearing Wes's story, I decided to do my due diligence and contact the ministry and see what their protocols were. When upon hearing of abuse within the ministry, I basically got the runaround. I tried to talk to the Deputy Ministry of Children and Families, Alan Marquardt, and on numerous occasions I wasn't able to talk to him. Basically, he stood me up and deferred me to one of their media coordinators. And basically, the media coordinator gave me the runaround again and sent me some pretty basic protocols that should be followed when you think the children are in harm's way and are potentially going to be hurt. So that's what the ministry did. They wouldn't really answer my questions directly. They wouldn't talk with me about Wes's concerns that he detailed to me. And as far as the RCMP go, I tried to sit in on a meeting with Wes and the RCMP just to be a independent observer, which they didn't want to have happen. So I basically just sat outside and waited for Wes to finish the meeting. But from what I've heard from that meeting, the police know that the paperwork is all there detailing the cases that Wes was talking about in our article in the Agora there, and they refuse to investigate any of his allegations, and all they have to do is look at the files.
And before I hand the mic over to Wes to talk about that, I wanted to quickly talk about the other article that you also printed in your paper here, and there's another co-founder here being Ryan Foster, the co-founder for the Agora too. But you printed an article by Kevin Annette which talked about the child trafficking in beautiful British Columbia. So, you know, can you quickly just touch on that, and then I'm going to hand the mic over to Wes, and then also Ryan's going to jump in and say a couple words too.
Okay, well, that article starts out by talking about a UNESCO report from 1998 that stated that Vancouver was one of the top three child trafficking cities in the world. It also goes on to detail that through the First Nations reserves in BC, specifically Squamish, affluent pedophiles are basically taking children from the reserves and bringing them into high-end social clubs in Vancouver, where they
Vancouver
stay for
Club,
a few
right?
Hours. Clubs in Vancouver, and where they stay for a few hours, and then apparently are shipped back to the reserve. So that was in our our first issue. No, it was in our second issue. So if you want to look at that, it's online on our website. You can go through that whole article. It's a very powerful article. It details a lot.
What is your guys' website?
The website is theagoranational.ca.
And Wes, you wanted to quickly jump in and say some stuff about Marquardt and, you know, the running around he also gave you in the past?
Sure. When I first met Al Marquardt, it took forever just to get a meeting with him, and I basically had to shame the staff of Rich Coleman's office to even get that far. In fact, when I spoke with Rich Coleman, who was the Solicitor General at the time, He ran away from it. As soon as he heard what I was there to talk about, he took off. I'm too busy now, and he took off and went and hid in his office. So eventually, being persistent enough, one of the staff members, somehow I get this one-hour meeting with Marquardt. He just wants to know what I know and who knows what, and he's making a little list. And the whole time, it had nothing to do with protecting the kids. It was nothing but fear. So that was the one time I spoke with Al, and then couple years later, I speak with a junior reporter at the local Metro, the Vancouver Metro paper, and she actually contacts Al Marquardt, and she says to him that she's calling about the maples, and he says to her, comment to her was, we already took care of that. And she says, well, can I have a copy of the paperwork? Can I have a copy of the investigation? He goes, there isn't any. Well, if you took care of it, where's the paperwork? Simple as that. Now we're looking at a sin of omission. You have to have the paperwork behind it, and more so, here's the guy who actually walks through your door and says, I got some real serious concerns, and here's where you can look, and you don't walk me in the building, and you don't say, can you please show us this paperwork? But the patterns that I went through, the patterns that I kept discovering while I was dealing with this, as you started Googling and you started going through the old archives of the Vancouver papers, sure enough, the same patterns were there in 94 to 98 when Serena Fry killed herself, a young 12-year-old.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in the second half of the show. And also with the RCMP, when you did that meeting with the RCMP, what were actually some of the questions that there was a two-hour meeting with them. What were some of the questions that they were kept asking you?
Well, you know, it sure looked like they were coming after my credibility. And every time they would ask me a question, I'd have to get them focused back to where we were going. And they, every time I said the paperwork is there, all you got to do is look at the paperwork. And they say, well, we're not going to do that. Well, why wouldn't you? The paperwork is there. Go into the institution. I will show you the paperwork. And the one incident where the young boy actually dove off the overpass, number one highway, he should never have been let out. Document 10 times over shows this. Clinical depression, day after day. But they, I said to them, well, you don't even have to go to the Maples to find out if this actually happened, because you would be the detachment that had to investigate it. You're the detachment that responded. So not only would there be your files, there would be the ambulance reports, the hospital reports, the psychiatric reports, the incident reports. There's a paper trail. And if you want to tell me none of that is there, then go talk to the kid and ask him how he got those injuries. And if they want to say, oh, it's not true, and then ask the kid that, where were you living when this happened, when you got these injuries? Because they were severe. It's a miracle the boy was still living.
Isn't one of the, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that the police had the motto of protect and serve.
Well, yeah, and you would think. I mean, this is kids. I mean, this has gotten to a point where I would like to use another word, but this is getting really sick. How can these people in the position of authority not protect these children? And even when I look at the new billboards that we're seeing all around town, CTV, we work for you. And there's a picture of old Bill Good. And Bill Good's one of the guys that, well, he just did everything he could not to bother with this. So I'm not sure exactly who they're working for, because it's certainly not us and it's not for these kids.
I sent an email to Mr. Good a week ago Sunday requesting for him to come on here as a guest to answer some of the claims that you're putting against him. And I also sent the exact same email over to CKNW. And I sent an email over to the Agora. And, you know, I've yet to receive a response from Mr. Good. So I say to our listening audience, I went today, and what I did was I printed out a page contact information for CKNW. Anyone out there listening who wishes, who cares about the children and wants to make a difference here in British Columbia and wants finally to have Mr. Good to come up and answer some of the stuff that we're talking about and stand, you know, basically answer for himself, here's some phone numbers that you can call to CKNW, and hopefully Mr. Good will therefore, you know, come forward. The open line is 604-280-9898, and then basically the main switchboard is 604-331-2711. So I'd ask our listening audience, please go and call CKNW and ask them to ask Mr. Good to kindly come forward onto our show here. We're going to give him a platform. We'll also be inviting Mr. Pigeon here, and we'll be inviting Ryan and Dan from the Agora. and that time, and then we would be basically recording it on video and putting a copy of this up on the Agora website. Now, if Mr. Good does not come forward, then what happens is everything that Mr. Good alleges to stand for, I will question everything. And I'd like to quickly hand the mic over to Ryan. Do you want to add some points there, Ryan?
There's really not much to add to that. Obviously, if Mr. Good wants to reestablish his credibility in the eyes of all the listeners here, he's going to have to come forward and address the issues rather than just continuing to avoid it. And I can't, for the life of me, conceive of why he would be so evasive on an issue like this. I mean, it seems to be universally an issue that everybody should want to address. I mean, these children are in danger. They're being abused, neglected. Protocols aren't being followed. Who's going to stand forward here? Who's going to stand up and take responsibility for what's going on? And if it's not the people in positions of power, influence, and authority within major media in BC, who is it?
And pardon me, Wes, you wanted to add something real quick?
Well, it's interesting because the more I put my feet into this, it was nothing more than to protect the kids. And then you start asking questions. It's just natural. Why aren't people protecting these kids? And other stories start coming out. It gets pretty disturbing to hear some of the stuff that you're hearing out there and who's spending time with who, who's friends with who. And it was a real shame because I actually spoke with one editor of a small town newspaper. And I'm trying to show him photographs of conditions of foster care in his exact community. He refuses to look at them, and he's lecturing me. He's the same fellow who was the moderator at the local politicians at the federal level at his public meeting. That politician's office told me that I should just go and see someone like Oprah Winfrey.
Is that the paper that's over in Abbotsford, the Abbotsford Times, that's tied into the Vancouver Sun?
Well, actually, it wasn't the Abbotsford Times. It was another one in the Fraser Valley, and it is tied into the it's in the Black Press chain. But it's real interesting to see, and I've spoken with David Black twice about this, on the phone, in person. David Black, that's who's on the other end of the line, wouldn't touch it. And I'm starting to think, like, when does this end? But those connections to our provincial government, they got it wrapped up pretty good, you know.
And also the Abbotsford Time, you're talking about that one that's tied into the Vancouver Sun.
Oh, absolutely.
You've had a little bit of run-ins with them. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, they actually have an editor that was out there named Gord Kurinoff. Now, Gord is quite a guy. In fact, if you read some of his stuff, it's incredibly inappropriate. And he said some things in there that, well, it's very inappropriate. But they had some concerns around Abbotsford. I actually spoke about concerns around the Abbotsford Police Department because it came through my office as community service officer with probation. When I addressed those issues, he referred to me as a yo-yo, wrote an editorial about what a yo-yo I was for even saying things about the police like that. Well, I didn't need a crystal ball, and people are saying, well, it's almost like you're prophetic. Every time you pick a newspaper, we see there are concerns within our police departments. I just happened to talk about it about 5-6 years ago. And I got called just about every little dirty name in the book for doing it. And lo and behold, I was right. But the one other person that I was, and I tell you, it's a who's who I spoke with about these issues, but there was another on-air CKNW member, and I believe I heard him once talking about his own daughter who was handicapped. When I spoke to him about this, his comment to me was, no one cares about this stuff.
Do you have that person's name? Can you share it?
Oh, I do. And it's sitting here, and I'm really disappointed with this man. But for the most part, it's probably best just to tell the story as it is for now. And to have him actually say that to me and have another on-air personality at the CKNW tell me in person what has been said about me behind my back, you start wondering who's covering for who, who made a phone call, because, yeah, it was said. It's pretty disgusting, you know, that they're trying to say that, don't take this guy serious. He's a nutball. But the actual word they used was, we're told that you're a lunatic. We're not supposed to talk to you. We're not supposed to waste our time.
But the evidence is there within past reports, and also Ryan and Dan's paper, the Agora. I mean, they've actually written two very good articles, and they show how evidence-wise that basically what's going on. And Kevin Annette writes an article for him, just out of this world, right? But we're going to go to break real quick. So, Dan, I wanted you to quickly add some last-minute thoughts before we go to break.
All right. Well, yeah, I just want people out there listening to call CKNW there, put some pressure on Bill Good specifically, and also put some pressure on your elected representatives who are supposed to be protecting our children here. because I've got young children, and if they have to grow up in the same kind of society and might be placed in the same situation as some of these other kids are, I don't think we're doing our jobs as parents. I don't think we're doing our jobs as protectors of our future. So I implore everyone to please do something about it. Make some phone calls, put some pressure on our politicians and our media. They should be exposing this stuff.
And again, the main switchboard number for CKNW is 604-331-2711. Ryan, do you got some thoughts that you want to share just before we go to break?
I just want to remind people that they can read all these articles and look at the extensive documentation and really determine for themselves the validity by going to the website for the Agora, which is www.theagoranational.ca. That's theagoranational.ca.
Okay, it's Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. You're listening to Hidden from History. We're going to call it a quick PA and then throw in some music, and then we'll come back in a couple of minutes.
Hey, Red.
Howdy, you rebel scum. For working class or punk rock politics, art and activism, awesome outlaw music, rebellious rock and roll, and more, tune in to Sound Resistance. We're on almost every Friday morning at 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon with your hosts, me, Dr. Joey Only, Mr. Mike Zinger, Rowan Lipkowitz, and the entire Pedal Revolutionary crew. We break the rules on CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio.
From the burning of the flares, stocks are a-selling and the hammers ring. This is gonna be the next big thing.
Fruit of my trees, fish of my seas, wheat of my field, everything you need. You act like I never gave you enough. I gave you my very own body to suck. You act like I never gave you enough. I gave you my very own body to suck. A false lack is a lie. Your impulse for ruin is glory denied, and violence is not virtuous. The things you do are hurting us. Violence is not virtuous. The things you do are hurting us. Treat me. You love me. You're not an occupying army, you are of me. So treat me like you love me. Soil is your soul, earth is my name. I know who you are, we're one in the same. My soil is your soul, earth is my name. Treat me like you love me. You're not an occupying army, you are of me. Treat me like you love me. You're not an occupying army, you are.
are of me. Treat me like you love me.
Welcome back to Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Hidden from History. I am the guest host for today. I'm filling in for Kevin until he gets back. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. It's going to be archived on www.hiddenfromhistory.org. Also be archived on my website of www.angus-mcleod.com. McLeod spelled M-C-L-E-O-D. And what happens is that I was looking through the internet and I came across a very interesting website, and it was actually the 1997 legislative session number, second session, 36th Parliament, Special Committee to Review the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act. Now what happened was there was a gentleman by the name of Gordon Watson that he was talking during this special session. And he actually was saying that he, since 1993, he submitted 20 requests for freedom of information. But what happens is he never got a response. The commissioner in charge of that refused to keep on adhering to his Freedom of Information Act. So anyway, Wes, you've also read the exact same report. Do you want to talk a little bit about this? And then we'll also go on talk about how it talks about Serena Fry, her father, and other points in it too.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it was a actual committee that sat to talk about the freedom of information concerns in the province of British Columbia. And you got to remember, this is back in 1994-ish, in the 90s, regardless. And we've come nowhere in our freedom of information. And as we see what he talks about, they talk about this man had the documents and there's public records. And unfortunately, the government of the day were afraid that he's basically calling them out, saying they're afraid of scandal and embarrassment. So bury it, bury it, bury it. Now,
we're the NDP at that time, too.
Yes. So this obviously sounds pretty familiar. We just have a different party that's in that boat now. And in my little journeys trying to deal with this, I actually had a reporter over at CTV who got angry with me when I said, you know what, you need to quit taking direction from Bill and tell a story. And he says, I don't appreciate you talking about my anchor like that. But what he said to me is he actually made some freedom of information requests, and I actually provided him with one of the kids who is now an adult, and he interviewed him. And he says to me, I'm going to make the freedom of information requests, and he says, either we get the paperwork, and if we don't get the paperwork, then we do a story about that. Well, next thing you know, he won't even touch it. And so the freedom of information, he never did get anything for freedom of information. And anyone that's been around this case that I'm talking about, anytime they've tried, you've got 30 business days that they're supposed to provide it, and to this day, nothing has ever been provided around this Maple stuff. So we're talking 10 years later, you know, what have you, and now we're looking at past the Serena Fry stuff. We're looking 15, 20 years past, and still nothing.
Well, there was one point from the special session which really touched me, and I think it was the father that basically submitted this as an affidavit. What happens, I have evidence that my daughter, Serena Fry, was murdered by the government of British Columbia with the full knowledge of the government of Canada. Crystal Fry is now undergoing the same type of psychological warfare that led to the death of her sister. These events have been covered up by our corrupt politicians and juridical system with the help of the media. Now, 2 weeks prior to Serena Fry allegedly hanging herself and committing suicide, what happened was she was raped. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, reading the paperwork, it was a 27-year-old man, and she was 12-year-old. The Maples actually let her out. And if you look at a report, a little article written October 23rd, 1994, Anne Reese wrote the article talking about the Maples let kids out to roam mean streets. That's the title. Why did Serena dry? And as you go through it, it actually talks about, they said that she was no risk for suicide, and it took them by surprise. She had a history of slashing. And so they give her this pass, and on a Friday night, she gets to roam around. This has been going, when I was working there, it was still going on. It was a free-for-all. You'd have kids from all over this province, 3 o'clock in the morning, Main and Hastings Street, 13-year-olds. And this is the program. Nothing was ever done. There's another article here where you've got a girl, and the article, and again, it's Amy O'Brien, Vancouver Sun, July 10th, 2003. This girl was placed in the care of the Maples, and it talks about every evening she was picked up by a pimp when it was taken out to work. And the parents were just frustrated with this. And now a lot of times when we talk about these things, we say, well, there's got to be a better way. Well, absolutely there is. But we've just seen the pattern that it's starting to look like no matter who sits in that chair, until you get these people out of the chair and you start putting the kids first, history just keeps repeating itself.
One question that really was touching on me right before this show, you and I were sitting down, and I was saying, what actually, with the children that go to the Maple Center, why are they being sent to the Maple Center? What are some of the main reasons that the government's using to do this?
Well, a lot of it's when the kids can't, when a community can't work with a child anymore, they're having problems. The Maples is supposed to teach a community how to work with that child. You also have the not currently responsible to the mental disorder, the unfit for trial. But for the most part, it's a 28-day assessment. The kids will be there for anything from behavior issues, self-harm issues. It could be just, and majority of it's just kids that don't have the social skills, don't have the life skills. There are five areas of adolescent development, and they cover a lot of these areas. So when you start doing assessment on these children, you're looking at these areas and see where the deficiencies are, where the strengths are, and what things you want to put in to help them. Problem is, when you go to the Maples, and these articles back from the Serena Fry situation, it's a party zone. It's a free-for-all in there. In fact, at night, it got to a point at 10 o'clock at night, it became a war zone in there. The damage that was done, it was a free-for-all. And I tell you, it's if you knew how your taxpayers' money was being spent, you people would be furious. And the photographs I can show you about foster conditions, again, you want to know how this can happen and how the people that are looking after these kids even got in those positions and why, when these things were done, people got promoted. It's unbelievable.
And Ryan, I wanted to quickly ask you to get your comment on this also, but there's a Vancouver Sun put out an article where the pimp was, you know, prostituting his teenage, basically, excuse me, I'm not sure... sex worker would basically be the political term to use during the Olympics, and it was written within the Sun.
Yeah, and interestingly about this article, they put a lot of emphasis on the internet as being the reason that there's an apparent increase in this child prostitution in Vancouver. They put a lot of the blame on the internet as enabling people to find new avenues to find these children to victimize and exploit. Well, I find it interesting that they would blame the internet, considering the internet is the reason that so much of this stuff is getting exposed now. Independent media are the ones coming forward and exposing all this crap that's been going on for decades in Vancouver. Now, why haven't the papers like the Vancouver Sun been putting it on their front page, you know, to get more and more, you know, over the... I mean, there's so many stories about this stuff. And either it's in the back of the pages, or it's relegated to the internet, or it's in the, you know, it's buried somewhere in the archives. Why aren't these papers, these mainstream media outlets, dealing with this? And why are they blaming the internet when they should be really looking at themselves?
Is that one of the reasons why Dan and yourself founded the Agora? Was that way the real news can get out? Because there's articles written in the Agora that, hands down, I mean, I'd like to stand up right now and just go like this, because you guys have done a great job.
That's exactly why we created the Agora. Actually, we used to organize a lot of events in the Okanagan, and the problem with events was that, I mean, you could create a lot of electricity, a lot of energy in the air, but by the time the event is over, the momentum has completely dissipated into the ether, and there needs to be something to channel that energy forward through time and create. I mean, there's so many movements and so many groups within Canada all working, you know, for one or another issue, and all these issues are important in their own right, but all these groups are fragmented and seemingly incapable of achieving any kind of more cohesive systemic change movement. And there needed to be a venue that could provide an avenue for all these different groups to get their message out there and finally start circumnavigating the Iron Curtain of ridiculous, you know, omission and stonewalling that is the mainstream media in Vancouver. I mean, all the newspapers in Canada are owned by a handful of corporations. It was inevitable that something like the Agora would arise, and it's not a surprise to me that response has been so explosive. Everybody that sees the paper and reads the articles is surprised, seemingly, or a lot of people are surprised at the quality of the writing in the articles. And it shouldn't surprise people, because there's no shortage of quality writers and journalists wanting to write about real issues. There's a shortage of papers and outlets willing to print that material, on the other hand, and that's what the Agora is here to remedy.
Wes, you wanted to talk about the child, the foster care stuff you're pointing to?
Well, it was actually interesting, because before I came here, Reg, I actually stopped down at the Vancouver Province and I dropped off a package for Patricia Graham, managing editor of the Vancouver Province. Now, in 1994, October the 18th, there's an article they wrote. It's an editorial about Open the Door, and they're very angry why the provincial government of the day would not give them the information, and they kept hiding everything, and they basically kept everything secretive, and all the free information stuff was blacked out. They took it to court, the whole bit. Anne Reese, the reporter that took this on, she actually won awards for freedom of information attempts, but she couldn't get this story. And so when I dropped this package off, this is their own words talking about the exact place that I've been trying to get them to help, the Maples, the psychiatric ward, where they're fed up. So here comes the first staff member ever to walk out and say, I'm tired of this. As evidenced in one of their articles, June 16th, 2003. There's Gordon Hogue and Jenny Kwan on the front page, or the beside the article, and they're trying to talk to a staff member, the reporter, and the guy's willing to talk to him. And after the shift, he comes out and he basically says, I can't talk to you now. I'm in enough trouble already. And he takes off.
And the name of that title for that article is Fear in the Air Over Cuts to Kids in Need.
And so when you look at this thing that comes back in 1994, the Vancouver Province, and I wrote on the piece of paper, I said, now, you're either going to protect the children or you're going to protect the abusive situations. What is it? Are you guys hypocrites? Or did you really mean what you said back then? Is this politically motivated? Was there a connection, the back door, where you have to put your preferred political party in? Who knows? But what I do know is I don't care about political lines. Never have, never will. The most important thing here is these kids. The rest of it will take care of itself.
That's extremely important. What I'm going to do now for the listening audience out there, if you want to ask Mr. Pitchin any questions or Ryan any questions, or even want to add any information to the show right now, our call-in number is 604-684-7561. I say again, 604-684-7561. And Ryan, you want to add some stuff?
Well, I look forward to hearing what people's questions are regarding the paper and about these important issues. We're actually putting out a new issue for March right now of the Agora. It's the best in quality in terms of aesthetics and the written work within to date. And
it looks like Molly wants to say a couple words.
Oh,
go
sure.
Ahead, Molly.
I've been enjoying the Agora since it came out and since the Republic stopped. And I noticed you do have a lot of scientific articles. I really enjoyed the one on aspartame that was printed.
Yeah.
What is the ramification? Like, is there anything that can... Are you afraid of anybody getting angry at you for publishing, fact that may bring down a large corporation? Like, is there any... Do you think that there's a risk?
I suppose when you're speaking the truth, there's always a risk that, I mean, there's always people out there that don't want the truth to get out. But the real danger is in not speaking the truth, in self-omission, and in allowing these things to kind of get swept under the rug. If you want to protect other people in addition to protecting yourself while you're protecting other people, you need to be as loud as possible, not shut up, so that as many people as possible know what you're saying. And if there was some kind of real threat against you for putting this information out, everybody would know about it. And there'd be too much risk to those who might like to shut you up to really take that step.
So then with that in mind, why would the province, as Wes has just explained, given all these facts and words even written by them, what do they have to fear for... I mean, I know this is kind of a stupid question, but... Do you have a reason for why mainstream media is afraid to tell the truth? I know it's an obvious answer.
Well, I mean, we can speculate about many things, but I did touch on, and knowing many of the older advisors, et cetera, or in the old days of the NDP party, you know, they had a philosophy years ago. And the one thing that kept coming up was, say, we can't get any proper press. They just won't support. And when you start looking at the second biggest advertiser in the newspapers is the Liberal Party of British Columbia. They'll say the provincial government. But when you look at their public affairs bureau, millions and millions of dollars are spent there. So it's smart business. If you're gonna, you want the right party in, think about who donates to those campaigns. We're talking basically these newspapers, if I'm not mistaken, they are huge contributors to the Liberal Party. Now, I would think that that would be a conflict. There's got to be a problem in there somewhere, but who am I to say?
There's actually, what happens is, if people take the time to read something called the BC Constitution, which came out a couple of months before we joined Confederation Canada, it's been updated, and what happens is it lays out procedures that elected officials are supposed to follow, and it also lays out how you're not supposed to take money and everything from certain aspects of society, and you know, there's these procedures that are followed, so I'm pretty sure that what happens is, if you checked the Constitution here, he checked that basically the possibility of some sort of tie-in with the province or anywhere else, the traces all the way back to any politician within British Columbia, they violated the Constitution, thus they should be held accountable in the court of law for doing that.
Well, to go a little bit further with Molly's question, it's pretty hard to deal with Bill Good. When I Google once, and up comes Bill Good's name as one of he sat on a board of advisors for the Government Excellence Awards. I mean, you are the media, and you're sitting on a government's advisory committee for excellence awards for government employees. And it's interesting because one of those awards, one of the first times it was given out, the Children and Families Minister at the time was Gordon Hogue. He's got a long history. In fact, he got removed from his position at the Youth Detention Center, and he got off of that accusation. Then he becomes Children and Families Minister, and he has to walk away again because Doug Walls, the car dealer from Prince George, got caught with, you know, there was these contracts that were going out, and of course Gordon Hogue said he knew nothing about it. And all the connection, if you go deep, you see the connections. But that award, there's Gordon Hogue, and when I put the heat on this stuff, the lady that was running the psychiatric ward, her name is Lindsay Setzer, she's one of the first people to ever win one of those awards. And it's like, when does this end?
And I got a quick question to ask you about 93, 94, and around that time, who was the Attorney General at that time here in British Columbia?
Well, I wasn't working there at the time, and that's a great question because I...
Because in that report that actually you and I both got a copy off the internet, in this basically special session that they did, it actually said that the Mr. Watson, Gordon Watson, you know, that 20 requests he puts in for the freedom of information stuff, then he basically points to the commissioner, was stopping it and everything, and it talks about the Attorney General, but it doesn't really mention a name, so I was wondering if you may know the name.
Well, offhand I don't, Reg, but what I will say is interesting is, on another article, October 26, 1994, it was a storm over Serena, girl's death sparks political furor. Here's Liberal House Leader Gary Farrell Collins calling for a public inquiry. So that's the Liberals in opposition. They want to know what's going on behind closed doors at the Maples, but now they're sitting in that seat, and all of a sudden they don't want to know? Now, I believe Gary Collins, is he not the fellow who is involved in the Bassey trial, if I'm not mistaken? It would be the same Gary Collins.
I'd have to check out that.
And don't quote me on that one, but I'm pretty sure that's the same. But now you've got Health Minister Paul Ramsey. He stands by his ministry's decision to withhold information. Now, it's interesting because Paul Ramsey, Carol James actually brought him on board when she was, during one of the elections, she says she's going to hire him. They were going to bring him on so he could teach her what to say so the people will vote for her. And so here I am trying to deal with Carol James, and here's all these same names that were involved with this, the Adrian Dixes. And
don't forget about the Provincial Green Party at the same time, because, you know, their leader, you confronted their leader, and the leader said, well, you know, right during the election, this is not fitting with our policies, sort of thing.
Well, she said, we're not going to worry about that stuff. We're just going to win this election on our policies. And, of course, it was too easy of a line not to address, and said, lady, you're not even going to get one seat. but I don't think it took a genius to figure that one out.
She actually used the exact same excuse when I introduced her to people to talk about the corruption within the mining here in British Columbia. I mean, words to the, similar to that were used to my associates that I introduced them to, and it's amazing that the policies that they wanted to run on were not very solid, because they sure didn't get, I mean, didn't get any seats.
Well, the one thing that always strikes me odd is, if you actually looked at the last campaign, Gordon Campbell had a picture taken, and Brian Adams took the picture of him. And he's, the pose he's in, it's a knockoff of a Tommy Douglas look. And that's the ace in the hole. That was voted Canada's greatest citizen of all time. How come the NDP aren't using this man? Because that is the foundation. That's the one where everyone goes, we need a guy like Tommy, or, you know, people are looking for honesty.
Well, I'd like to quickly add something to there. What happens is my late relative Hazen argued with the last leader of the party that became the NDP party, and he ran against Tommy Douglas in the leadership. He later left the NDP party and became a federal Liberal senator. But Mr. Douglas, I'd like to quickly add something. I believe, in my humble opinion, that members of the federal NDP party have turned on Mr. Douglas's idea of universal health care, and so has every other federal politician, because we don't have universal health care right now. If we had what Mr. Douglas talked about, then what we'd have is we'd have that any Canadian can walk into a hospital and get free treatment throughout all of Canada. All you'd have to show is just you're Canadian, there's your basically card, and you get your free treatment.
Well, I'm going to go down, just quickly down a little road, because we're kind of away from where we started. But I have a friend. He's one of my best friends. He's an old legend, National Hockey League. Played with some of the old greats, Rock Richard, John Beliveau. He's one of the guys. And when I want to get him all wound up, I'll start talking about this stuff, and he goes, I'm sick and tired of this. He says, every time we go to the polls, we're always voting against somebody, and that's exactly how it is. And if you talk to anyone on the street and you make that statement, they'll agree with you, they'll nod, and they'll kind of laugh, and then off they go. So, you know, maybe it's time for a shakeup in this province. And the one thing I know, the least respected thing, no matter where you go, is you're not allowed to hurt children. You're supposed to take care of them. You're supposed to protect them.
Yeah, children are our future. Actually, Ryan, you wanted to quickly add something. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, you're not allowed to hurt children, but you're also not allowed to talk about it. Not allowed to talk about other people hurting children, because it hurts people's feelings, right?
Well, what happens is I fully agree with you, Wes, because children are our future. And the only way that we're going to have a positive future is to have it so that we have to teach the children right now. We have to teach the children about every single horrendous thing ever done in our past. So that way we can hope that they'll learn from it, and they'll make sure that they don't make the same mistakes that have been made within our generations and past generations. And that's what I fully think. The only way we're going to have a positive future is we have to start with the children, and we have to protect the children. If you see a child getting hurt, it is your duty and your obligation to go up there and defend that child.
Well, Ryan said it, and he referred to when he talked about the Agora, and Molly had asked him that question. And he says, you talk louder. Well, when a child's being abused and they're told not to say anything, the first thing you tell that child is you talk and you keep talking. And it's no different than us as adults. If something's not right, keep talking. Because eventually talk gets into a place where it shouldn't be. And all of a sudden these people, they will run and hide. And she talked about, are you worried for yourself? At the start, these people made my life pretty tough. And the intimidation, it was unbelievable. And finally, as the tide started to turn, they started running, the cowards. That's the only word I can use, cowards. I'll say to people, there's only one topic you cannot argue. There's no counter, and if you take it, you're a fool. And, you know, you'll walk them down the path and say, are the Olympics good or bad? Now, there's a counter that, then they'll both sound reasonable. Is run-of-the-river projects good or bad? And there will be a counter argument, east side. But the one topic, there is no argument, are you allowed to abuse children? And anyone that takes that argument, you're a fool.
And also, it looks like we only have a couple minutes left. So, Ryan, would you like to say a couple words?
Sure. The Agora is coming out tomorrow, the March issue. Like I was saying earlier, it's really interesting, kind of a hodgepodge of all different kinds of views. Like I said, we don't take any one particular agenda or ideological slant. It's just about providing the citizens with a venue to put citizen-driven news out there, real news, once again. There's no doubt in my mind that this paper is going to be playing quite a substantial role in future media of Vancouver and beyond.
Hey, Molly, would you like to say share some closing words?
Yeah, it's not a hodgepodge. I think it's actually doesn't have a gossip column or a sports section, you know.
Right.
It is it's a great cross section. I would be proud of the Agora.
Is hodgepodge usually a negative connotation? I mentioned
hodgepodge. I think of that as that gluey, sticky collage stuff that you put like lint and dryer lint in.
Okay, no podge. Maybe some podge. I don't know.
And I mean, if someone has to hang out the dirty laundry, and if the mainstream media isn't doing it, thank you for doing it.
Certainly, we'll hang out all the dirty laundry fearlessly, but we'll also continue putting an increased focus on positive solutions and what people can actually do to organize and, you know, create a vision for what's possible. So on the one hand, we provide the yin of what's wrong, and on the other hand, we provide what could be done about it, and we encourage all our writers, all the people submitting articles to the Agora, to try and include something. If there's an emotionally distressing article, I mean, that's just the fact. Sometimes the truth hurts. Try to provide something that could provide relief or a direction to go to alleviate whatever problem it is that you're bringing up. Because I think that's generally the problem with a lot of papers, aside from just being corrupt or biased or money-driven. They're either almost entirely negative, almost entirely apathetic and blasé and celebrity gossip column driven, or they're almost entirely exclusively positive, as in nothing but the naivete of what we could do without exposing any of the problems, without drawing on any of the emotional motivations as to why we should change the world in the first place, as to why it's so bloody important that we get the news out there and organize people.
Well, thank you for that, Ryan. And I'd like to say in closing that we're going to continue this series exposing what's going on with the children in regards to the foster care system and how they've been abused and neglected. And what happens is there is laws out there. So once people are told about this, and if you don't do anything about it, you're violating the law. There's a law out there. And if you read the Agora and you read the first edition, you'll actually see what the law is called. You'll see what sections basically they're basically violating. And you'll also see a list of people that West has gone to. And what happens is each and every one of these people, you're not only facing the possibility of 6 months in jail, you're facing the possibility, according to the law, of a $10,000 fine. With that said, I'd like to say thank you so much for listening in. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO, Hidden from History. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. Again, this is archived on www.hiddenfromhistory.org and my website of www.angus-mcleod.com.
Just a stranger.